All right. So, Mark, Kathy, Marlon, everybody, what you just kind of seen as a recap of the last 5 years, there's a whole ton of detail, other things in there, a lot of it's in the magazine. Any questions, things that we've done and accomplished? We want to kind of begin to transition now and start talking about the future. And so I want to bring John Mangold up. John has been with the foundation and the society going all the way back 2003, 2004, as we really, as the ACP began to look at where the future is going to go, what we want to accomplish, and all of that. And so one of the things John's done, and he's going to share with you, is he spends a lot of time talking to a lot of you and getting information and input that the board can use, the society can use, our leadership can use for the future. So we're going to have John kind of just take us through some of that, kind of where everybody's at in their mind right now as well. So let me get that up for you, John.
Am I running my slides while I talk to him?
I can. You want to use the microphone?
No, just big voice here. Is my big voice okay for everybody, or do you need me behind a microphone? Perfect. You guys have heard a lot this morning so far about who we were, who we've become, and what we think we are now. My conversation in the next few minutes is going to be about what you in the room have said, this is what we should be, this is what we can be, or why the hell aren't we? I love those phone calls. Again, the people in this room have the one integral thing that we all need, and that's commitment, passion for that commitment, and a willingness to do something about that commitment. And so as I ask you to look at what I'm going to talk to you about today, we've talked a lot about ammunition that we didn't have when I first met this community in 2003. We talked a lot about weapons. And again, for those of you who know me, yes, I'm a militant, aggressive SOB, and I'm crazy when it comes to defending who I call one of us. If you're one of us, you're in the room. Those of you who are one of us understand that this doesn't happen easy. This is going to be something we have to commit ourselves to. We have to stand up, show leadership. We have to make the uncomfortable conversation to those who aren't in the room. What the hell was your problem? Don't tell me what should be done if you're not there. Where's your donation? Where's your lapel pin? Where's your banner? Those of you who've worked with me know I'm militant about this. I will go at anybody and ask those questions repeatedly. I talked Lornell Hansen into wearing a Joker jacket with question marks and dollar signs and walking around Denver for 4 days. If you believe, you will get it done. You will go and get it. Steve Zimmet never once cried to me about, can we build a board certification? He just said, let's do it. All right, that's where we're at right now. Great expectations is the word that we're using as the board level to talk about our next vision. And so as we looked at this, many of you in this room have talked to me by phone. Some of you have talked to me by survey. And so I want you to see what you, the people, are telling me we should be doing right away. And as you guys go forward the rest of this afternoon, I need you guys to argue with me, with everybody, the same way some of you argued with me. Can you go to the next slide? Inside that vision statement is digitally available online, open access to the public. Anybody who wants to see it can see it. I shared it with each of those people. I interviewed directly, and I was given a list of 105 people that the board said, these are key opinion leaders. Please talk to these individuals, get them to speak, because this is who we think is going to be helping us chart and execute any vision we pursue in the next 5 years. 57 people were willing to give me time. And I was fantastically appreciative to everybody in this room who did it. I know some of you, I did one interview at 5 a.m. as the young lady was driving all by herself in coffee. I had to listen to her stuff. Yes, it's Zoe. I told her I would not mention it, but I wanted to, she called me. She said, the only time I've got is 5 a.m. Can we make this happen? Yes. There's a psycho in this room who did 4.5 hours with me on the interview. All right. Most interviews were very short, but your passion for what you do, what you see is necessary, where it can go, has got to be translated into action. And that's where I'm standing here in front of you saying, this is what you can be and you can do as you look at it. I don't want to get into an argument of, is the data valid scientifically or not? I'm simply telling you what you, the people, are telling me you want to do. The interview results came back as this. Now, when I met you guys in 2003, everybody said that group's nothing but a bunch of vein squirters. That's all you guys do. They're superficial. That's all you are. And many of you said, no, we're not. I do a lot more different in my practice. And as time has gone by, we have begun to evolve our education, our brand, our identity, our image. And ever since we added the phrase vein and lymphatic society, it is amazing the change in the second column. 5 years ago when we started, everybody was asking me, why would we do that? We see that many limp edema. I had no, I don't think I see that many limp edema patients. And in 5 short years, you've gone to 49% of everybody who I interviewed said, hell yes, we are. That is who we are. That's what we do. That's where we should be. That's where our flag should stand. The interesting thing is that people go, when I'm looking for information on lymphatic disease, you're somebody I consider. You put those two numbers together, that says that you guys have a solid position on the hill of lymphedema as part of your identity, your membership. But there are people in this room who said we should be doing pelvic, we should be doing wound care management, deep venous, thromboembolism, peripheral arterial disease. I asked that question of everybody in the study so that the board and the people in this room can help guide the decision-making process of what can the society become? Who should it be representing? Who should it be training? When it writes its guidelines, who should it be speaking to? How should it be considered relative to the image that it has in the entire field that serves this patient community? As you look through the data, it tells you again, people who are paying attention to us in that top blue, that dark area, those that say, hell yes, we are on the bottom, and that grows every year. Now, one of the most interesting facts in this entire process was this. Wound care management. The very first question, it was, hell no, I don't look to you guys for wound care. And I said, great. What happens if I asked you leg ulcer? 83% of those saying hell no changed right away to, yeah, that'd be won over, yes. But because I said wound care management, their brain locked up. That's not who we are. That's not who they are. That's not what they understand. But if we start talking in terms of what our people are serving, who they're treating, what they're thinking about the way they operate their practice, it tends to be down to a semantic or nomenclature label that we have to consider seriously in our conversation, in our messaging, in our advocacy, in asking people to get on board behind these visions. So as you look at these issues, I want you to see that that's what the slide is intended to represent. And again, I underline, Dean made it clear, all of our presentations are available to you digitally. We will give them to you. You will have them. So don't worry about jotting notes as much as looking at and thinking about how am I going to argue with John later. Next up is... there you go. Thank you. Study results. ABLS, what are we known for? One of the questions I asked of everybody who I interviewed in the study was, give me two things ABLS does that's absolutely sacrosanct, things that you think are lovely about them. That is something that I want them to never damage, to own, to keep, to protect. It is an asset you cannot lose. And it was interesting, the comments and the quotes. And again, some of you are absolutely the most interesting thinkers I've ever met in my life because somebody went and called this my home. ABLS is my home. It's where I live. It's what I want to be in every day. Kathy.
So this is non-prompted. This is what's
unprompted.
So this what? Is if you didn't say volunteerism. This is
what. What are your two biggest important things? Now, when you ask me what does volunteerism mean, I have quotes that I'll be able to read you. I can stand here and read hours of quotes about the process. What I will tell you is that as the feedback came in, if somebody said your ability to get volunteers to man up, put in the time, and go get that done is something that I find unique to the communities that I work with, I'm a member of, service, or work with from an exhibiting or methoding or commercial platform in any way, shape, or form. Your ability to get volunteerism to be productive is something that I highly value. My opportunity to be a volunteer, to work in a process that I want to affect change in. You make that possible. Do not deny me that. Do not take that away from what you are as a society. If you look at the character, character was an interesting thing. How often do I get to rub elbows with somebody the likes of, and they came back with, I don't see that in my practice every day. These are people I need to get a hold of. I want to have access to. I know what I'm doing, but I want to know what they're doing. Access to the character of the people involved, the ability to listen and to say, I disagree. You're not a moron. I don't agree with you. You're not an idiot. I'd like to work out something where we agree together. The character of your leadership was something that stood out. Your leadership style. Quote that came back to me in leadership style, I don't work with a society that's willing to put its reputation on the line and stand up and make this argument. The way you assert yourself in leadership, the way you message to people about advocacy, what should happen, the willingness to be push the process in so many of our committee friends and our collaborative relationships. Those of you who know me, I sometimes want to strangle our collaborative partners. Those of you who work with them know I'm pushing constantly to get something done and through the process because I know you guys want to see progress. So our leadership style is something that you've come back to us on. Assertiveness is the other big quote. Now, assertiveness is interesting. Assertiveness comes from those people in this room going, I want you to be more. I want you to get aggressive in lymphedema. I like that you're talking about lymphedema. I want you to be assertive in lymphedema. I want you to continue to do what you do here in venous and start doing it in lymphedema. I see what you can be in compression. I want you to start doing it more in compression. I have a very belief that there's a mistake here in this area of treatment. I need you to be more aggressive or assertive in this nature. And I believe the society is capable and has the reputation and the leadership to do that. Medical education, as again, you see it, if it's being taught, if we can reinforce the ignorance, if we can reinforce an effort to combat the ignorance in some practices through apps, through how we teach them to absorb what they think they know and prove what they need to know back to us in a way that's just not difficult to an experienced physician or healthcare provider is something that I think this society is doing well, and that's where the feedback we're getting under medical education. I like what you've done here in this training program. I like what you did for my practice during the pandemic. I like the way you're giving me practice advice on how to operate this. I really wish you would do more in terms of how to manage practices and make them more financially profitable. I'm having challenges about marketing. But they see you as the medical educator to them and their direct product interests or their direct practice interests. Inclusivity. If you end up cutting somebody out of venous access and care, you're going to have a big damage to who you are. Because everybody who started somewhere else sees you, as I said before, the mothership coming home. This is where I want to be. Kathy is a perfect example. The history that she just laid out. I started here and I ended up here. There are so many people in this room who, when I met them in 2003, were essentially emotively crying to me about, it's so hard to explain what I am today from what I started out to be when I studied. And I want other physicians and other people to understand the odyssey that it came to becoming a venous and lymphatic medical professional. I can tell you that I've had cocktails with everybody in this room. I've had emotive moments with my friends Diana and others about how they got to this field. If you look at the history of how you got here, that passion is evident in everything you're doing, and you all want that to stay as part of this society. The VLM commitment, that is something that showed up on the radar during the interviews. It's this, I think it's time for a professional identity. I think it's time we define ourselves to those who continue to trying to define us through whatever means they want to use to limit our influence, limit our scope. We've got to start coming up with an identity professionally of what we are going to represent and how we're going to do it and what that future is going to look like. Operations, that's where they get to tell me how good Dean is and how much I suck. I have no problem with that. I get a lot of negative criticism. I get a lot of people punching me in the face all day long. It's why I'm 300 pounds. I like to take the punch. All right. The thing I want you to understand is we, the staff in this room, can't appreciate enough the comments that we got in this interview telling us, you guys are better than any other society we work with. You do it differently than every other society we work with. I appreciate the fact that, yeah, I didn't use everything I was supposed to use that you were offering me in the benefits package, but damn it, you tried to get me to pay attention. We weren't in a position to use that. Oh, John, I forgot to come. Hey, can you help me out? I forgot to book my flight. Can I still get a room? Amy, that was last night at 8:00. And yes, the individual in this room owes Amy a big kiss on the cheek. She got you in. She took care of it. She figured out a way. That level of service is something that we continue to say to you. That's what you should expect from your staff and anybody else you work with. Our study results. Who are our competition? Now, this is a duh, okay? Of course. The thing that I do, though, in this interview is I asked that of everybody as we were evaluating, who else do you listen to in thrombectomy? Who else do you listen to in pelvic venous disorder? And this was the result of the people that came up most often as potential leaders, as potential sources of info in that field that we're talking about putting our flag up in. Owning, being a part of, having as part of our identity. That to me is important because that also tells the board of directors where to go find our collaborative partnerships with. Something that ABLS doesn't do that these organizations provide them. That was something to find out just exactly what are we missing? How short are we? What are we not doing right? Those of you who know me, I never kiss my own arse. I would rather spend time telling me about what I'm not doing right so I can improve the product in the end process. I want to be better for you. If there was something we're not getting to, great. Now, you want to know what the criticisms were? It was impossible to categorize because of the scattershot responses. Some people wanted me to change the pricing of membership by $100 because they thought it was $100 overpriced. They thought we should add an e-pass, where the e-pass has been out there. I didn't have the heart to tell them they don't know what they're talking about. It's already there. What I wanted them to hear, though, is that there are things we could be doing better. Tell me what it is, and I'll go back and find a way to be better messaging on it if we're already doing it, or to improve your awareness of it through training, through more promotion, or through webinars that target in on these issues. Next up, the study results. What do you see as a specific weakness? What's wrong with ABLS? If it has a cancer, tell me what that cancer is so I can go take a look at it, put some makeup on it, cut it up, change the hair color. Most of you know I've dropped 50 pounds and I'm growing my hair out for the first time in my life. That's why this ugly beard's on my face. I want to see what another world looks like for me. So as I looked at what these people were saying about you guys, I took a solid look at it. Leadership. What does leadership mean? Why does your leadership say this when I disagree with it? Did you talk to them? Did you have an opportunity to say, I disagree with what you're doing on that? I go out of my way to bring together our commercial friends and our physician friends to have an engagement on what we all would like this to be about or work on. And if you're not telling each other the truth in this room, I'm scared to death for the future of the specialty. So I encourage you, everybody in this room has an opinion. It doesn't make it wrong or right. It just needs to be worked out on how we're going to pursue what we're talking about. The leadership comments was a identified criticism of, I just want more. I want you to do this. Why aren't you attacking this in lymphedema? Why aren't you attacking this in reimbursement? I want you to go get a gun and put the gun to the back of the head of the congressman and make them vote this way. Okay, I want you to hire, I want you to do this. I want you to attack them with lobbying. Great. That's the feedback on leadership, evolving advocacy. Most of those criticisms came from, it's great that you did all these things, but if there was 1% off my reimbursement, you failed. If we gave one penny back, it was a mistake. You didn't do enough. If that's the metric for success, I don't know if we'll ever make those individuals happy. But what does evolving advocacy look like? How do we become more effective? That gave me a lot of comments on healthcare economics outcomes research. I will fully admit I am an ignorant moron. I cannot tell you what healthcare economics outcomes research means in a medical setting. But that has been brought forward by many people in this room as something we need to add to whatever we're doing in advocacy to have an impact that we believe in this community will evolve our advocacy to a higher level of efficiency and performance and getting us the reimbursement expectations that we want. What does healthcare economics outcomes research mean? Those individuals who took the time to mention it to me during the interview process and in the study, please make sure you bring those comments up during today's conversations. I am putting it out there on the table, and you don't have to say it was me, but what is it that we're talking about? What is it that John brought up is a great way to show off, and I did promise confidentiality to everybody in this room who did do an interview, so I will not name names. Research, again, look at the number of how small it is. You're doing it. You're starting to get there. Now, are there people who are like, you did 3 studies and you should have done 8 by now? Yeah. You know, we had a little bit of hiccup with the patient reported outcomes proteus registry, getting the data out. As Marlon touched on, we finally found a provider at Telesix who's doing a fantastic job. We are turning around stuff now from data pulls in 30 to 45 days. It comes down to the ability to write a query with those people who have an interest in writing the group and getting it to a level to where it's ready to publish. And in some instances, since we started working with Telesix, we've been able to get it done in 40 to 45 days. Not putting a permanent goal on that. I'm just stating the problems that some of you mentioned to me in the study are gone away or going away quickly, and productivity from patient reported outcomes, proteus and lymphatic registry is going to be dramatically improved. Staff, those are the people who hate me. Hated the fact that I called them, hated the fact that I hounded them, hated the fact that I begged them to be a participant in the interview process, hated the fact that I sent too many damn emails into your inbox. Okay, and to be honest with you, 15 of you last night said the same thing to me during cocktails. 15 in this room said, you send me too many emails, John. I get too much in my inbox. Love you. Tell us how to do better for you. Don't just tell me I send you too many emails, because when I don't send you an email, you yell at me about why I didn't tell you. I can't win unless you tell me how to win based on your metric.
Image,
that's something that people kept talking about. You guys are just the superficial. I don't see you ever getting past superficial. You guys are squirters. It's all you're ever going to be. Are you really more than that? I just don't see you as our customer base. Our sales team doesn't see you guys as doing deep and pelvic. They just don't see you that. Where are you doing that? We only really service and work with institutions or hospital-based. How are your members doing that? And I never saw your members as doing our type of work. And there are new people in this room right now who have been so intrigued by what you guys gave them as an opportunity to learn about your space and criticize it, that they're here in this room to find out more about what you're talking about doing, because now you've got their attention. All right, so understand that's what image means. The Pro Registry, there are some people in this room who think it's absolutely the magic bullet. I will tell you, I see everything in the registry as a ton of ammunition and a gun. I want you guys to tell me which direction to point it and who gets to pull the trigger and how. Taking the assets that we've built in the last 15 years and deploy them within an advocacy setting and to advance the level of patient care is a serious question that everybody in the study has asked us to look at and to see what we can do in that area. Next up, survey results for membership services, additional member benefits. I'd love to have another magazine made as part of my membership. I'd love to have access to the registry. If I put my data in, I don't want to spend any money to get my data in. I didn't have the heart to say to those people, it's already been done for you. We're not charging you to get into the registry. We need to figure out how to hook your data, your electronic medical record up and get it to wire itself in. There's an expense with that that we have ability to grant and support. But what we need to work on is how we get a benefit to you, an additional membership benefit, how you might be able to add more services. Can I bring all of my staff with me? Or, hey, I can't afford traveling my staff. Can I get a group membership for my ultrasonographer and my nurses and my partner who doesn't necessarily agree we should be doing Venus work? Yes, these benefits are possible, and we are making that possible now. But additional membership benefits was not a big concern. Membership expansion, how you guys are going to do things. This is where I want you to do more, do new things, do new activities. Overwhelmingly, it's advocacy. If it doesn't have anything to do with helping fight the reimbursement fights, many of you in this room don't want to discuss it, because right now that's what's under a lot of practices pressure right now. Any questions on these slides before I move up? Awesome. Study results, the vision statement. Now, when you put together a vision statement, it's two things. It's intended to be a touchstone for communication, a foundational beginning to a conversation. It is not the end point. The vision statement was gotten a lot of criticism, this, that, and the other. I don't want you to misunderstand the percentages that you're seeing here. 10% said negative. I didn't like what I read. It frightened me. That's an emotive response that's standard operating procedure normal. They're worried about access to care. They're worried about being excluded. If you did have a board certification, does that mean that as a podiatric doctor, I wouldn't be included in this? Am I going to be excluded? So that negative response is largely an emotive reaction to what this might mean to me if it became true. No reaction. I'm wondering if you can do this. Is it achievable? Is it deliverable? Is it something that we can get done in the timeframes we're talking about doing? That's feedback that you're seeing from the study, and everybody, both in the survey and in the interviews, had that general feedback on that question. So, this is the fun one. This one kind of grabbed some of the board leaders who helped write the vision statement and set them back in their chair. And some of you smiling right now understand why. The word needs freak people out. Needs. What does needs mean, John? Why is needs in there? What if we don't get ABVLM recognized by the American Board of Medical Specialties? Is there any value to that? Or if we don't, is that a complete failure? Why is needs there? Can we even do it? And God bless Dr. Schoonover and Dr. Dole and in their presentation coming up later. So when Zoe talks about this, that's something that many of you in this room need to hear about how we're going to get from where ABVLM is now as a board certification to being able to identify itself eventually as board certified in. That is a huge terminology to many people in the industry, and including many of the advocacy responsibilities that we get. They're looking for the voice that is supposed to be empowered. Right now, there's so many voices coming at some of your payer relations and policymakers, as I talked to Robert and others on that, that they're looking for, how do I discern who I'm supposed to listen to? What's the credentials of who should be setting policy? And what happens when there's different voices? I can tell you I've had deep conversations with several individuals in this room, and I'm only going to use this one time, Dr. Albert, because I know you're going to say it at some point. We have issues with even physicians who look at us and argue that we're not the experts in venous disease, from family practitioners to generals all the way down. And when those voices start saying you're not, as a payer or policymaker, I can see why they shut down and lock up and start freezing and making crazy ass determinations of who they're going to reimburse based on training and background. All right. So that's a conversational point you need to maintain throughout today. Pursuit of the ABMS designation. When I said, okay, hey, these are the things that they say are going to help us get to from where we are now to get us over whatever perceived obstacles are in our way to get to recognition by the American Board of Medical Specialties and the ACGME standards that go with fellowships to get there. All 14 of the identified initiatives in the study that were out there on a laundry list, and so many of you were like, that's ridiculous. You can't do 14 things in a 5-year strategic vision. I wholeheartedly agree with you. But we needed to take every piece of feedback that we were getting and have you, the community, identify your top 3 to 5, where you were going to see as successful ways of providing value back to both your practices and to the organizations that you serve and represent, and ultimately combined to the patient care that we all have as equals. These initiatives, I didn't have enough space on a slide to put them all in today. They're all identified in the background statement, A1 through E5. I categorized them by advocacy, research, and educational initiatives. I then grabbed the top 5. Can you go to the next one? This is the top 5 responses. 86% of everybody who I interviewed or got from the survey said, Jesus, God, get me guidelines, get them written, get a professional standard out there. We need something. Something that becomes a shield so that when I go into fighting with advocacy interests or I go into fighting and defining whether payers should be listening or not, I need an official type documentation that is hard to argue against. They see that defined as guidelines. Now, I can tell you when you talk to Mark later, Mark and his team have been working hard on it. I've been beating them like a slave saying, please don't send me into that meeting without the guidelines done. Have them done by such and such a date. And they are working through the process as it's been defined by the process, by the people who value what a guideline needs to have done. And they are very close on everything that he showed you this morning. And I wanted you to see that those processes are ongoing. I cannot give you the questions. That is something that the process has to maintain confidentiality on. But if you have an interest in how the guidelines are being developed, Mark is here. Come talk to him over cocktails, beer, whatever. He will tell you all that he can. But I am not in the middle of that process. I can tell you that I am going to him and saying, I'm getting beat over the head. They need it by November. They need it by December. Where are we at relative to that? And he is giving me the answers that I'm allowed to come back and give to you guys. The funny thing, the blue thing on the side, of all 14 of the things that are on that list, and everything that you mentioned is high, and so many people mentioned multiple ideas as high, more than 3, I asked them to pick of the highs, who are your top 3? Identify your top 3. That blue column, 50% of everybody who mentioned this is a top 3 issue for them. 1 in 2 say, get me the guidelines. Where are they at? Enhancing policymaker efforts. All right, now for some people that means build a lobby. For others, it means get me to the Hill on a policy day, going from person to person, door to door, meeting with people directly. For others, it's go hire me, the greatest lobbyist that ever existed, and make that individual create a pack for me and get that done. You need to ask yourself when you make these suggestions, how do we get that done? And how we get that done may be beyond our expertise. It may be beyond our financial capacity. It may not be something that the society should be doing because there is a limit to what a society should be doing. So as you look at these issues today, understand that that question is where that is at. Increased AVLS branded research. That is something that many of you in this room say that will help us overcome whomever's criticizing us. If we start doing joint projects, joint studies, joint initiatives, and we put our data out together and share it, that we do better by more of us. But I need AVLS to continue to be reinforced as the point on this issue, particularly when I go see policymakers and payer interests. I need AVLS to be recognized as and be supportive in the voice of the eight behind us, knowing that the eight behind us will let us be first or let us go in at the front.
Foster Pro patient measurements.
This is something that is growing out of advocacy as well. There is a lot of discussion about fee for service to fee for value. In the event that we make a migration in reality to fee for value, we have to define what fee for value really looks like. If you look at the number of different patient measurements and metrics for creating that identity, there's 30 some odd, 50 some odd, according to some of you. I am saying to you, if you want to be able to dictate that, maybe we need to look long and hard about creating, this is what the AVLS says, is a patient reported measurement. And if that's the case, great. Who defines that? How does it get defined? What's the metric for that? And how do I incorporate it into my workflow without adding or cutting into my ability to be productive with the patients I am seeing or need to see on a daily basis?
Hiring a recruiting coordinator.
For those of you who understand that one of the unwritten rules of the American Board of Medical Specialties as a hurdle to receiving their recognition, there is an undefined number of fellowships that are need to exist, need to operate, and have to be there in order for them to take you as a credible, relevant threshold. Some number is out there, they don't define it, they don't tell you what it is. So the only thing you can do is look at the people who they've recently awarded the American Board of Medical Specialty recognition to and determine how those people got there. That's why we invited the sleep medicine people who led that effort to be a part of our program later today. They're going to be here to talk to you about what they did to finally get recognized by ABMS. What we understand is that there's a number of fellowships that ABMS looks for, and that when you hit that threshold of relevant medical active fellowships, you suddenly become relevant for consideration. If that's true, that's how we have to get there. We have to get more fellowships out there. We have two new fellowships willing to come online. We have five active with seven potential already in place. We just need to fill them with candidates, and we're working through the last two candidates and those two that don't have them, and we have two that want to come online. So we could be up to nine in the end of August, active and functioning. That is possible. Is nine enough? I'd say hell no. The board looks at it and says it's probably between 15 and 20. How do we get to 15 and 20 is a question. Do we need to get to 15 and 20? If the board was going to pursue fellowships and solve that problem, they have determined that it's probably better to hire somebody who's experienced in building fellowships and speaking with institutions that house these medical fellowships, or people who are willing to put on a rotating fellowship, get some assistance on the staff level from ABLS, the staff, in coordinating and helping direct and support and get them placed properly. That may be an initiative that you as a group need to consider. Should we do it or shouldn't we do it? As you see, half of you in the room are like, I'm not sure that that's what that needs to be or why that needs to be. I want you to understand that those who get this and say that is what it is, overwhelmingly and largely said, yeah, we should do that. But there is a lot of people in this room who went, I'm not so sure. So expect conversation on that, ask it. Would you invest in your top three? This is my ability. And for those of you who know me, I put everybody, okay, great. Thanks for talking to me. Did you donate? Did you put your money where your big mouth was? Because if you didn't, I don't understand what you're telling me what I should do. You're okay with spending somebody else's money who's invested, but not putting your own cash in. Where's your leadership at? What's your personal stake in what you just spent time telling me? And everybody in this room has demonstrated by giving up a Saturday and coming into Chicago, that is here in the room. But understand that when you look at things, you've got to be able to say to somebody, either I or my employer would probably think strongly about investing in that initiative if it addressed a problem that I want solved or that we believe exists. But for those that said, yeah, I would, I went so far as to say, would you really? What do you got to be shown? What really is going to help you say yes? And these responses overwhelmingly would come back. Either show me the commitment to advocacy that are in line with my goals, commitment to advocacy in line with my goals. Not, I have a commitment to advocacy, that's no question. It's in line with my goals. And more detailed plan to achieve this with benchmarks. I need to know you're going to get that done in 6 months. You're going to get that done in 12 months. You're going to get that done in 2 years. Is it going to be there at the end of 5 years the way we want? They want that as part of anything you put on a solicitation to raise funds or to promise the community this is what we're going to be doing over the next 5 years. Next up. Dean and I had a long debate. I wanted to put this at the start. Dean very wisely convinced me to put it at the back of the process, today's presentation. This is your history. This is what you've done. You created a foundation through Foundation for the Future of Phlebology. You raised $3 million. You got 152 gifts in total. You received 17 corporate commitments with 135 member gifts, and your average leader, that's the people in this room, leaders. There's a reason you're here. There's a reason why you were asked to be here. There was a reason why you're targeted as individuals, not as commercial executives. This is member healthcare professionals donation. Average leader gift was that amount of money per person in total across 5 years. You go down to Vision for Tomorrow, $3.1 million was raised, 161 gifts, 19 corporate, 142 member. Average gift went up. Fantastic. New Horizons, $5 million was raised. We did more than we've ever done financially. We suddenly had a ton of new. That's reflective of adding advocacy, adding research that we weren't doing. These are definite direct products of the weapons and the ammunition that I talked about earlier. That was what came out of New Horizon. You'll see the numbers relatively still stable, which means so many people in this room recognized the expansion and were willing to step up to the new vision, what it was about. Unfortunately, the average leader gift dropped. That is something that I have spoken deeply to about the board. Some people in this room have said, you know, I have questions about what leadership means to your society. I have questions about why you put the word needs in your statement. You need to define what needs is by your actions. If you say you need to be giving me data for patient reported outcomes pro-venous registry, you need to be giving us data for patient reported outcomes pro-venous registry before you tell me what I should be doing with my practice. If you're donating and you say I should donate, you need to be giving me donation, not I'm a volunteer in my time and I also donate. No, you need to show even those who don't give their time what being a leader means by your actions. Think long and hard about that as you look at today's planning. What I will say to you is, interestingly, during Stop CMS, thank God for Larnell and his efforts and Jim's efforts and saying, we can't wait until ELS next year, John. It's got to be done now. We got to start fighting now. And they came to me and said, let's start the Stop CMS effort. And Chris said, these are the perfect people to be there. And Steven's like, let's get that done. We put Stop CMS together, and in a four-month process, we were able to raise $126,000 from 116 gifts, all of whom were AVLS members or healthcare professionals. We did not ask for a single dollar from our commercial friends and vendors because we thought that was totally inappropriate. They can do what they're going to do to fight this, but as professionals, we needed to fight what our own system of reimbursing us professionally is doing. We weren't about to ask them for their bucks. We did $126,000 in 4.5 months. I'm pleased with that. Could it have been done more? Yes. Did we have enough time post-pandemic to get some of the cobwebs out of some of the people's ears? No. But we did everything we could in a quick response time, and that's the success metric that we had. There was a lot of opportunity for growth. I am not totally satisfied, but I'm not critical of it either. Next up. What can we do? Who can we be? If we're going to go after raising more money, do we have a prospect pool who is listening and willing to consider a proposal? I then asked every interviewee who that individual, who that organization, who that funding potential source might be that we could put in front of them a solicitation at this level. Do you have a name? Overwhelmingly, they identified 7 potential sources of funding multiple times. You didn't make the list unless you got over 4 mentions in the study. If you got over 4 mentions in the study, I considered you were credible at that threshold, all right? And if you got hit in 5 different thresholds, I listed whatever organization, whatever individual, or whatever source in its most mentioned category. When I went back through it, I looked at it and said, based on history, based on sales, based on volume, based on product awareness, based on its historical support, I think I've got a potential prospect at that level. I cannot guarantee you that somebody's going to say yes, I am saying that if the foundation were challenged by the vision to go out and raise funding for this, we may be able to make an ask to somebody who will think about it at this level based on the fact that people in this room really believe that organization could make that level, could help us start the process by establishing a keystone of what everybody else needs to be doing. Now, if not, we can step down to a lower level and we can work the numbers out. I am not about to ask you to play prognosticator. All right. What I am saying is that you can make asks at this level without insulting, and you have a significant number of people in this room who justified why it's okay to put AVLS's name and FVLD's name behind a potential proposal at that dollar level on an annual basis. But I cannot tell you that it's going to be well received. I cannot tell you that somebody's not going to go, well, our budgets are just tight this year. So there has to be a conversation about how it might be realistic, how it might not be realistic, what is and what isn't based on the realities of, God bless our United States economy today. Healthcare professionals. This is, again, the killer slide that I like to use for the people who are not in the boardrooms with me and then with the society. Yes, my vendor friends, I am poking the physicians at what level they're donating. I am saying, you know what? Leadership looks like this. This is what the 81 people who responded to the survey and interviewed me and gave me a number thought this is appropriate. So the definitions of leadership as defined on these slides are telling you what the people in this room have said. Yeah, that's leadership. That's what I think is important. Those are the levels of commitment that when I look on the names, that validates whether or not they're stepping up and doing what they need to be doing. Next up, for my non-physician friends in the room, you know that I do not for one moment discount what you do in this space, but I also recognize the difference in income. I tested that as well. And those of you who have given me the time and feedback, even the physicians participated in this question, the answers that are on this stage are validating exactly what we're doing by level. That is something that is defined as leadership for those that are willing to lead. Is $6 million goal feasible? This is a fun question for me. Until you tell me what you're raising money for and committed to the vision, this is at best. If I asked for $6 million total publicly, do you believe I can do it? The response that we got back overwhelmingly was, not sure about six. Okay, if you're not sure about six, what are you sure about? Four and a half is a regular answer. All right, so when you go out to solicit, you need to remember that when you talk to people about your vision, you don't want anybody to give, if you ask for a $5 million goal, $4.99 million is a failure to people who look at, did we raise $5 million? Yes. Awesome. 4.99? No. So let's be realistic about what we can do. Let's be messaging what we can do. We can go with a challenge goal publicly as well. But let's be certain that when we've set a public visionary goal of what we're doing, that we're confirmed and committed that there's a budget process behind it when the money comes in to support the full scope of what we're committed to. If we can't do that, we need to limit the scope. Great expectations, project advice. This is my closing slide that I asked everybody. Okay, you've just given me 4.5 hours for some, 90 minutes for some, 60 minutes for most. What's your response? Yes, conduct a capital campaign. It's necessary. We need it. We're not where we want to be. We're not ready to stop. We have needs we need to address. And if it needs finances, we're going to have to find it from the community. Go do this. I'm a part of it. I understand it. Go. Those that said, no, I would not. Overwhelmingly, they're freaked out about whether or not this economy is going to turn around, whether inflation is going to stop, whether reimbursements are going to continue to be cut. How are we going to address this? Still, 7 out of 10 people in this process said, you got to do something. You can't just sit on your hands and do nothing. So I'm supportive of it. I think we need to go after our top initiatives as I've defined them. Now let's figure out whether we all agree on that vision or not. Anything else? I take the time in this and I've given this to the both boards and I've said flat out, this is what you have to commit to as organizations. In order for the community to feel motivated to be a part of this, it is possible that you can conduct a fourth capital campaign. The initiatives, despite all the headwinds and the negativity, have to be acknowledged in the presentation, have to be acknowledged in the ask, have to be acknowledged in the proposal. If you walked in and asked Dean Bender for $1 million a year, he's going to laugh at you because he doesn't have it in his pocket. Some of you are saying, help me understand the level of my involvement in that big vision. And that's where we're at. Despite the negative headwinds, it is possible from everything we've said, we've heard from in the community. Most people in the community have stated to me, if we just renewed what we're giving you this year, one more year, we can do that. Total came in around 865,000. If you just did a hold for what you're doing this year, again, next year on a 1 year vision, I don't think that's going to get done what you guys say you want as a community, but that is an option on the table as we go forward, how we pursue next steps. Each of these specific statements are there outlining everything I've just said. I put it in writing to the board so that they walked away with no arguments on what it is we think we can do if we agree that's the vision for tomorrow. Anybody who wants to talk to me, argue about this, or have your own marketing departments or your own business managers at your practices, call me and ask me questions about this. Great. As I promised everybody who had participated, there is a level of confidentiality that I will maintain at all times. If you want specifics of who said what, never going to happen, Mark. He's asked me four times in the last 2 days, can I just, who said this? I'd like to know about that. I didn't say you were the 4 hour guy until you just announced it. Jeez. Anyway, as you look at this process, know that I'll tell you what somebody said, but I need you to understand it in the context of the full interview. And if I give you just a little snippet, you may run off with your hair on fire in the wrong direction. And I need you to fill in the full 60-minute conversation on that specific answer. Thank you guys for your time. I am always here. You guys know I don't sleep. I take phone calls for you guys texting me at midnight last night. Thank you. I left the bar at 11:45. If you need anything from me, you have my cell rings. All of you should have it by now. And if you don't, come see me. Dean pays me to collect the crazy ideas and the good ideas and the bad ideas and bring them back to him so that we can figure out what we can do to help you. We don't say no, we say let's work it out. How? Thank you for your time.